Everyone, I'm your host, Zuri Flower. Thank you for joining me on this Positive Thursday, the Funny Side of Life, episode 15, Love, Drama. That is going to be today's Positive Thursday topic, Love, Drama. Who don't like love drama? Drama can be so toxicated. It can be like a feeling of doubt and kind of like confinement all in one. It can make your heart beat very fast. It can make you feel like you're in love when you think you're with the love of your life, and you get blindsided not seeing that love drama coming your way from that handsome guy or either that beautiful woman. I believe that we all deserve to have real love in our life. And to me, that is self-love first. Because in order to attract that special love, that is the number one key, is self-love first. And knowing how to love the right way as well too. Because many people don't know how to, especially if they grew up in an environment, you know, where they've seen nothing but their family fight and argue all the time. Because that's what I've seen a lot of my family do, argue and fight. So I had to learn on my own how to fight love drama on my own and learn how to, you know, love the right way and how to go about how to build loving relationships, to be honest with each one of you. Question to ask each one of you listeners. What is your definition of love drama? I know everyone has their own opinion, and I would love to hear each one of y'all definition of what do love drama mean to y'all? What is your definition of love drama? So after this podcast, email me at zoeflower8@gmail.com. All right, moving forward, y'all. Now, a list of love drama movies. For those of you that love dramas, that's in love and not in love, and you want to check out a good love drama movie, check out Dirty Dancing with Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey. I love Dirty Dancing. That movie is a classic. A Star is Born. That came out like over a year ago. A Star is Born. That has the movie that plays Lady Gaga. She plays in it. And she plays along this, I think it's a country singer or whatever. I haven't seen a movie yet, but I heard it was an excellent movie. Love Jones with Lorenz Tate and Nina Long. That is a classic. That's another love drama movie. And Is It Romantic? Number 4. That's another love drama movie you can check out. And Pretty Woman with Julia Roberts. And last but not least, Queen and Slim. They came out a couple months ago. That's another love drama movie y'all can also check out as well too. So that's Zuri Flower's 6 love drama movies y'all can check out. Dirty Dancing, A Star is Born, number 2. Number 3, Love Jones. Number 4, Isn't It Romantic? Number 5, Pretty Woman. And number 6, Queen and Slim. I tell you, the names they come up with these movie titles is hilarious. When you're in a relationship with someone and you're dating someone, whether you're married or just regular dating someone, you know, sometimes you may go through love drama. It may just be disagreements. Or maybe you might find out that your significant other has somebody on the side, which will make you catch a case. That happened to me. I can say so many stories, situations I've been in when I was with someone and I was blindsided by love. And I thought the person was right for me and they wasn't the person who I thought they was. And I found out they had someone else on the side. And I almost caught a case. This happened back in 2017, everyone. I was dating this guy, making a long story short. I was dating this guy. I thought that I met the man of my dreams. And I thought that he was the love of my life. And I thought we was going to get married and all this other fantasy love bond stuff. And to come find out, he was seeing multiple women. And I just snapped. I went off because I invested a lot of time in the relationship I thought it was. You know, my energy. I know I was a good person, a good friend. And when I found out everything, about what was going on. Not only did I lose time, waste it with this person, but also I lost who I was as a person, and I was about to do some crazy things that was going to cost me a lot. You know, like my kids was going to be affected by it, a lot of things. And that season, during that time of 2017, I learned so much about myself. It was a crazy season, everyone. It was like, you know, it was just crazy because I was doing things out of I was doing things that wasn't me. Like, for example, like I thought that he was messing around with one of my neighbors across the street, and I approached her, and the situation it wasn't true. Even if he was, so what? You know, because first of all, I believe that if you're in a relationship with someone, I know sometimes you can get so caught up. If you don't know how to manage your emotions, it can make you do some crazy, crazy stuff. And sometimes some situations can get so out of hand that it can turn deadly. And there's many cases like that that happen with people with love drama, and it costs them their lives. How many of my listeners love watching the stories? Remember All My Children and One Life to Live? Remember all the love drama that used to go on, you know, when it used to come on? I used to tune in. I used to watch, what was that? Santa Barbara. Y'all remember that when it used to come on? Like, I think it was like in the early 80s. Well, anyway, it used to be a lot of love drama going on there, I tell you. But here is a true life love drama story that turned deadly.
Maryland. Sleepy, green, and usually peaceful.
It was just a very rural, quiet, very quiet neighborhood. Not a whole lot of activity down there.
But a house in this neighborhood would soon crumble under a bizarre drama of sex and murder.
No one would expect something like this in that small little chunk of Anne Arundel County.
The mystery begins with a 911 call.
County 911.
But this 911 call is strange. Listen.
I just spent the day taking kids to the dentist and then going grocery shopping. I'm supposed to be leaving to take my husband to a doctor's appointment right now.
The call is so matter of fact, so nonchalant, and buries the most important detail.
But he's not responding at all, and he's got his gun laying next to him in the bed.
Do you think he shot himself?
I don't know. I didn't turn the lights on in the room.
Was she frantic?
She was strangely calm on her 911 call. Not frantic at all.
Police arrive to find this charming home on West Bayfront Road is packed to the rafters with clutter and dark secrets.
She's actually still on the phone with 911 when the officers respond.
The caller is a 42-year-old housewife and mother of five, Ann Anastasi, a composed, almost shy woman who seems indifferent to her husband's condition.
She's not hysterical.
No.
She's not crying.
No.
She just says, my husband committed suicide.
Essentially, yes. Very flat.
Ann leads officers through the crates of food and laundry to the upstairs bedroom.
The bedroom was not clean or tidy. That was just how they lived. There were papers, books, movies, clothes, both dirty and clean on the floor.
And on the bed, officers find Ann's husband, Anthony Anastasi, shot in the temple. A .45 caliber pistol just inches from his outstretched arm.
He was lying face up in the bed. There was a single gunshot wound, we could tell, that had been fired at close range based on stippling, which is burning to the skin that comes from a bullet coming out of a muzzle of a gun. But it definitely looked like a suicide, by all accounts.
Ann tells investigators she'd stumbled upon Anthony's body after dropping off her older kids at school, taking a younger one to the dentist, and grocery shopping with her 13-year-old daughter, who was home sick from school that day. The humdrum routine of any large family, until
she gets back home and her husband is in bed, motionless, not responding.
Ann tells police Anthony had been depressed.
The evidence that we got, mostly through Ann, was that he had had numerous back surgeries, and so he was unable to work at the time.
The officers begin the grim task of documenting a suicide.
They, in fact, asked if anyone else resided in the home and named her children, many of whom were at school.
Oh, and there's someone else, Ann says. A 25-year-old house guest, Jacqueline Riggs, who lives in the basement apartment.
Jacqueline Riggs was a young lady in her early 20s, seemed very kind of down on her luck. it seemed like she latched onto Anthony Anastasi as an older male, maybe a fatherly type figure to her that gave her a lot of attention. They asked if she was home. She said, well, I don't know. I hadn't heard from her today.
The last thing Ann did hear was on the previous night. It was Anthony shouting and fighting with Jacqueline in the basement.
When he returned to the master bedroom and encountered Ann, she said that he was very, very gruff with her, very short with her, told her to take the cats out of the room and go sleep with the children in an adjoining bedroom.
Police descend to the darkened staircase to the basement room and stumble into a scene from hell.
When we first entered the basement, there was extremely loud, heavy metal music playing, which added an additional kind of eerie effect.
And in the center of the room, it's more than eerie. It's an image of absolute horror. On a blood-soaked carpet lies the butchered body of Jacqueline Riggs.
Stabbed multiple times all about her body. Torso, head, neck, arms, hands, legs even.
42 savage knife wounds. Stabbed 20 times and slashed 22 more.
There was blood on the walls, blood on the floor, blood on the bed. You know, it was clear that Jacqueline Riggs had fought her attacker based on defensive wounds to her hands and arms.
In the thick of the gruesome scene, Detective Poole notes additional evidence. The outside door, locked. The windows, screwed shut. The room, strewn with piles of overturned trash.
It looked like perhaps he had stabbed her in the basement and then gone upstairs.
And at this point, you're working on the murder-suicide theory.
Correct. All indications were showing us a murder-suicide.
But those initial indications would be deceiving. Over the next few days, baffling details emerge, ones that turn the case on its head.
We were notified by the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner that Mr. Anastasi still had a projectile in his head.
And it's a game changer.
It was a game changer. At this point, we knew that we were not dealing with a murder-suicide.
Coming up, right bullet, wrong gun.
At that point, all bets are off.
Anthony and Jacqueline were in a three-way relationship.
With two in the three-way dead, case closed? Not so fast.
The more we learned, the more we were shocked. Every part of this was shocking to the soul.
A beautiful home in Lothian, Maryland. Outside, open fields of green. Inside, clutter, death, and horror.
We thought as homicide investigators, we were responding to a murder-suicide.
Down in the basement, a pretty 25-year-old girl viciously stabbed to death. Upstairs, a 40-year-old father of five dead from a single gunshot wound. But as detectives comb through the crime scene, they unearth a mystery.
The home was not easily searched. It was not a tidy home. It was not an organized home.
And buried in the clutter, a clue. Upstairs in Anthony's bedroom, hidden amongst the stacked VHS cases and only inches from a Holy Bible, a .45 caliber bombshell.
We found a spent shell casing in the bedroom near Mr. Anastasi and the handgun that was next to him.
Forensics labs compare that casing to the slug retrieved from Anthony's body.
The projectile recovered from Mr. Anastasi was a .380. That matched the shell casing.
What? Cops are shocked. The slug is not a match to the .45 caliber handgun found at Anthony's side.
As soon as you see he has a .45 caliber gun in his hand, you know that something's off. Because it's physically impossible for a .45 caliber to fire that .380. They actually tested that and found if you put a .380 round into that .45 caliber gun, it would just fall out the end.
It just didn't work.
So the gun next to him was not what was used to shoot him.
So what really happened in this house of death?
It was, in fact, not a murder-suicide. It was a cold-blooded double murder.
Now the question, who did it?
Set my ear free.
Detectives bring Anthony's wife, Ann Anastasi, along with their 13-year-old daughter down to the station to see what they may have seen or heard that horrible morning. And Ann tells cops what was really going on in the house on West Bayfront Road, starting, Ann says, with the abuse.
We
What's the worst threat he ever made towards you?
Held his gun to my head and told me to get out of his house.
And when was that?
That would have been a couple months ago.
Okay.
And I'm told if I ever tell the police about it, I ever tell anybody about it, he's going to kill me and whoever I tell.
Very controlling relationship is what she described, but also, by some accounts, a caring, loving, nurturing father. It just depended on who you talked to, and the children respected and loved him.
And apparently, the 25-year-old in the basement also loved Anthony Anastasi. Anne says Jacqueline Riggs wasn't just a house guest.
The family friend was likely more than just a friend to the husband. Is that right?
That's correct. The family lived in Michigan for a period of time and struck up a, if you will, like a three-way romantic relationship when they were in Michigan.
That three-way? Anthony, Anne, and Jacqueline Riggs?
The reported from Anne was some intimate contact, but that Anne was not a fan of that. And so after that one incident, she refused to participate in that ever again.
Anne refuses, but Anthony insists.
Anthony tells Anne one day, I'm moving Jacqueline to Maryland and she's going to reside in the home with us.
By then, Anne says it was a twosome and Anne was the odd one out.
I have to ask this question, Anne. Do you think that your husband and Jacqueline were messing around?
Oh, I know they were.
They were, and how do you know they were?
Because he'd spend most, well, not most, he'd spend a lot of nights down there with the doors locked.
Okay.
Like a lot of them.
Did you ever confront him about it?
I was told that basically to mind my own business, he's going to do what he wants to do, and if I don't like it, I can get the out of the house.
Okay.
And I'm not going to abandon my kids and leave them in that kind of situation.
Asked if there was any jealousy in the new arrangement, Anne tells cops, no way.
So I'd regularly tell him, well, she needs to get out. If you're going to stay with her, then you can both get out. Why are you here in the house if you don't want to be with me? You
okay.
Two can just pack up and go.
To prove it, Anne readily submits to a gunpowder test, gets her cheek swabbed for DNA, hands over her cell phone, and has no problem getting strapped in for a polygraph exam. If Anne is nervous, she doesn't show it.
It's going to matter if I'm yawning during this.
Her answers are simple and direct.
Have you been untruthful during this investigation?
No.
Did you shoot your husband?
No.
Anne was extremely cooperative during the initial interview. You know, every question we had, she did not hesitate to answer.
But things aren't as calm in the other interrogation room down the hall, where police question Anne's 13-year-old daughter.
13-year-old was extremely distraught by the death of her father. Very erratic, at one point tried to run out of our building. It was a lot of trauma for her.
And the traumatized girl is talking a lot, including the story of a blink and you'd miss it clue collected from the basement crime scene, a used pregnancy test.
Did the teenager reveal to you at some point maybe she overheard a conversation about Jacqueline and her father wanting to have a baby?
That's correct. The 13-year-old and her father had a very close father-daughter relationship. And we think when she overheard her father and Jacqueline talking about possibly having another baby, it definitely fueled some jealous rage.
Then cops take a look at the girl's cell phone and compare it to Anne's.
We were actually getting back a lot of detailed text messages between Anne, her 13-year-old daughter, and another person of interest who developed from a phone number.
That's when Anne's story started to fall apart a little bit.
A father of five shot point blank in the head upstairs. His 25-year-old lover slaughtered in the basement. Who did it? Wife and mother of five, Anne Anastasi, says it's all a mystery to her.
Two people were murdered in your home. Brutally murdered. Okay? And you didn't know what happened?
No.
But as investigators put the pieces together,
none of us on the team felt like things were completely adding up for us.
The cool-headed Anne had already allowed herself to be tested for gunshot residue. She took a polygraph test and let cops take a close look at her cell phone. Now detectives bring her back to the station to share the results.
There's a couple things I need to clear up real quick.
Certainly.
The test that they took from your clothes and your hands,
mm-hmm.
Well, they were all sent off.
Probably found lots of cat dog on there.
Well, we found a lot of gunshot residue on you and on the clothes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Cops tell Anne there's something else that's weird. The results of her polygraph test.
You have a failed polygraph. You're not just failing, you flunked the hell out of it.
They inform her of the inconsistent ballistics.
The gun that was found next to your husband was tested, okay? Compared to the bullet that was found in his skull, okay? There is no possible way that that weapon fired that bullet that was in your husband's head.
And most damning of all, what cops found in Anne's cell phone. A long call with her 13-year-old daughter at 3 a.m. shortly after the murders.
We got some phone records. And that night, you and talk for 582 seconds. Oh. 3 in the morning. That's about 10 minutes.
That might have been a butt dial.
That's not a butt dial. That's a long conversation.
Cops know that call was not an accident.
And this is bad for you. This is real bad for you. You understand that?
In fact, they've also got Anne's 13-year-old daughter's cell phone records. Cops say text messages show Anne and her daughter were actually planning the murders, getting rid of an abusive husband and the young woman they thought was tearing the family apart. And who they get to do their dirty work is a shocker. The daughter's 18-year-old boyfriend, Gabriel Strauss.
Gabriel didn't have the best upbringing, kind of raised himself. He needed that emotional comfort that he got from this family.
They convinced the boyfriend that Anthony and his much younger lover, Jacqueline, are evil abusers. And mom and daughter entice him to kill with an offer he can't refuse.
Anne actually said that he could come and live at their home once the two people were killed.
She lured him with this idea.
Yes.
Of giving him stability and giving him a home and giving him a family.
Absolutely.
And it seems like he so desperately wanted that he would kill for it.
Exactly.
They even planned out the murder plot.
There was a text message that was sent from Mr. Strust that said, I'm going to slit the girl and bust the dad. So they clearly had already worked out the manner in which each was going to be killed.
When cops confront Strauss, they aren't greeted by a crazed killer. Instead, they find a guilt-stricken teen who instantly confesses and reveals Anne Anastasi is the mastermind of the whole brutal plan. The night of the murders, Anne and her daughter pick up Gabriel Strauss. He lays in wait in their backyard for hours until everyone else is asleep. Then,
Ms. Anastasi is there in the kitchen where she meets him. She hands him the .380 caliber handgun that he would use later on in the evening against Mr. Anastasi. He had the gun in his hoodie pocket and had the knife in his hand, and he went downstairs to where Ms. Riggs was sleeping.
Jacqueline Riggs was asleep in her bed.
Yes.
When she was viciously attacked.
Yes.
So she woke up to basically being stabbed.
Yes. A grand total of 42 injuries.
She was fighting for her life.
Absolutely. And Mr. Strauss made it clear that he didn't leave the basement until he was certain that she had passed away. He comes back upstairs. Mr. Strauss then takes the handgun and fires a single round into Mr. Anastasi's temple.
Cops say Anastasi's 13-year-old daughter then takes Gabriel home. While they're away, Anne races in and plants a gun. As it turns out, the wrong gun in Anthony's hand. The next morning, Anne and her daughter wake up feeling guilty. Nope, hungry.
Got up, ate breakfast, got dressed, took a shower with Dad dead in the bedroom and Jacqueline murdered in the basement. That's pretty disturbing.
Gabriel's confession brings the whole house of cards crashing down on Anne Anastasi and her daughter. The three are arrested for the killings, including two counts each for first-degree murder.
Who do you believe was the mastermind?
Absolutely, Anne Anastasi.
Anne maintains her innocence, insisting on taking her case to court. But then, in jail and awaiting trial, the sinister Black Widow is caught up in her own web of lies.
This call will be recorded and subject to monitoring at any time.
A fairly incriminating phone call was made between her and someone on the outside that we happened to get our hands on.
And there she was, letting her true feelings show.
Even though we all think that the world is a better place for him being gone, and that her stupid twit should have known something was going to happen, getting 12 jurors to see the same thing is a problem.
Anne thinks she's off the record, so the clause and the motive for murder come out.
The problem is, it's not only him. There's also a 24-year-old girl that was dead in my basement. She's a moved into my house with me and my five kids. Her should have stayed up in Michigan. She shouldn't have moved down here. She shouldn't have moved into my house. How could you possibly have thought that was going to go well?
It was certainly something that, once we heard that, made our case significantly stronger.
When Anne's defense team is confronted with the calls, they beg her to take a plea deal to avoid what could be a devastating trial. She takes it and is sentenced to 2 life sentences. The 44-year-old is expected to spend at least the next 60 years behind bars.
I do not expect that she'll ever step foot out of a prison. She represents a different type of evil because while Gabriel Strauss wielded the weapon, he was very much a puppet of Miss Anastasia. And to me, that is more sinister than just literally pulling the trigger.
As for the 2 teens who fell under her spell.
To see the full version of the video version of this case, you can go on YouTube and type in Secrets in the Basement, Maryland. Anastasia is spelled Anastali, Love Triangle Case. I am super happy to know that this Positive Thursday love drama have inspired each one of you. Please share this podcast with others because it is powers in the numbers. And also, you can go to my YouTube page and please subscribe. I really will appreciate that. And also, follow me on Instagram. I'm ZoeFlower8 on Instagram. And also, I'm on Twitter at ZoeFlowerTwitter. And I would love to hear your feedback from this podcast. And also future podcast ideas or topics that you would like me to discuss on each and every Positive Thursday. I would love to hear your feedback. Send me an email at zoeflower8@gmail.com. And you can send me a message on this podcast. Y'all have a super rest of the blessed weekend. Excuse me, well, tomorrow is Friday, which is Valentine's Day. So for those of you lovers, couple or non-couple, y'all have a beautiful, fun Valentine's Day, and y'all have a beautiful rest of the week, and I'll talk to each one of you on the next Positive Thursday. And remember, love drama can be what you make it, but if you don't make the right choices and understand what true love is, and protect yourself and love yourself first, love drama can turn into something deadly that can't be turned back around to another. That can't be turned back around.